From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on August 30th, 2022. On that day, a longtime Trump Republican fully decided to leave the MAGA movement. For Rich Loges, it had been an agonizing year. At times, he had been nervous to talk to friends and family who had supported Trump, as he had. Rich had done podcast work. He'd been a proud member of the Make America Great Again movement for years. But by the end of 2022, he was done with it. Rich founded LeavingMAGA.org. You might have seen him featured at the recent Democratic National Convention. He's the co-chair of Florida Republicans for Harris. But Rich is not a fan of just denigrating the movement he was once a part of. He doesn't like shaming and mocking. He says a big part of MAGA for him was the sense of community. And he says you can't choose to leave a community unless you have a new community to land in. That's what he's trying to create now. It's not easy, but he believes there are countless Americans like him who would consider making the same choice he did if they felt safe to do so. And this happens at a time when a lot of Americans just don't believe that you can change your mind, that you can convince anybody that there are truly undecided voters, that there are voters who might vote one way in an election and 4 years later another way. But Rich says he's the proof, and he wants to talk more about it. He's the founder of LeavingMAGA.org. Rich, thank you for making time for the program today.
Oh, thank you, Evan. I'm really happy to be here. And I'm from New York originally, actually, Westchester County. I've been in Florida many years. And as your listeners can hear, you never lose the accent.
A little bit there. Why don't you start by just telling us a little bit about how political a person you were growing up?
Sure. Before Trump, I would say that I was a very political but ignorant person. Because my news and information sources, while they were somewhat varied, I did not pay as close attention at the time as I should have. And before Trump ran, I was neither a Republican nor a Democrat. My political sensibilities really developed in my late high school years into college. So I went 15 years between graduating college in 2000 and then up to 2015 when Trump decided to run, voting third party. I voted for Ralph Nader actually several times, as a New Yorker, including my first ever presidential vote, which was 2000 in New York for Ralph Nader. So when Trump ran, I was someone who did feel disillusioned and estranged from our overall political system. I felt like the two parties were the same. I felt like they didn't truly represent all Americans, even though they paid lip service to it. I didn't really think that their actions showed that. And when Trump decided to run for office, yes, he ran as a Republican, but he did run as an outsider, and I found myself initially not supporting him the moment he came down the escalator and as soon as he declared, but I was finding myself nodding in agreement with some of the points that he was making about the political system having failed people and people feeling unseen, unrepresented, unheard, some of the economic concerns about jobs going overseas, communities being hollowed out. So it did take some time for me to get to a point where I said, yes, I am going to support Donald Trump for president. And it was in early 2016 when I decided to volunteer on the campaign. And I did a lot of grassroots work, phone banking, helping people get registered, showing them where their polling places were. I also contributed a little bit to the call script. And my, I guess now infamous line, I'll think of it that way, looking back on it, is I contributed a part to the script about making history and electing Donald Trump. And in fact, it actually was, in its own way, a glass ceiling shattering presidential win, because there had never been a true civilian in our history who'd been elected. No government, no military. And for some, that disqualified Donald Trump. For me, I found that actually quite appealing. I also figured out, Evan, during the course of my curiosity about the Trump campaign, that both parties saw him as a threat. Now, again, for some, they saw that as a reason not to support him. I felt the exact opposite. My feeling was, as someone who did think the parties were the same and was a political independent, that both parties perceived him the way that they did was actually, in my view, a strength and not a weakness of his candidacy.
Okay. And how strong did your Trump support grow over the years? Tell us about that.
So when we, and I say we, which I'll call MAGA Americans, and I don't use MAGA Republicans because I think that I want to be more inclusive in talking about our fellow Americans in the MAGA community. On election night 2016, it wasn't just a matter of, great, we won, we did our duty, And then we just go on with our lives. And then we worry about the next presidential election 4 years later. We were validated and we were vindicated. We felt that we actually had taken on the world who was against us, and we defeated and conquered the world. So once we had that win, I just got deeper and deeper into my MAGA activism. I was writing and freelancing for a number of very, very far right wing sites, many of which are very well known publicly, such as, for example, The Federalist. I created a professionally produced podcast. I was an aspiring MAGA pundit. I would speak at Trump groups. I was a sponsor at Trump groups. I would attend a lot of the invite only MAGA events where I'd met people such as Mark Meadows and Dan Bongino and Dinesh D'Souza. And I got deeper and deeper, Evan, into the world because as a result of that victory for the 2016 election, I allowed myself to be influenced into believing that I was on this right, good side of history. And that everyone against us, whether they were Democrats or anti-Trump Republicans and conservatives, if they were not 100% with us, they were against us. And I say aloud because this is an important part of my story that I really want to emphasize to listeners and all those whom they know. I take full responsibility for my actions and my rhetoric. No one coerced me into supporting Trump. And as is customary, whenever I have a conversation about this, I want to apologize to everyone who is going to hear this for my complicity in helping Donald Trump divide the country. Donald Trump has pitted complete strangers against each other. He has torn asunder households and communities and places of worship. He's amplified with the Republican Party conspiracy theories that they almost certainly know resulted in unneeded and unnecessary deaths and suffering. So I have to offer that mea culpa and acknowledge that mistake that I made, because all of it came from this belief that I had, this succumbing of to these right-wing MAGA mythologies that anyone who is not with MAGA posed an existential threat to my life and my livelihood and my family. That's how I viewed Hillary Clinton. It's how I viewed the Democratic Party. And if we think back, Evan, before Trump declared, even though it seems like a million years ago, and in politics, almost 10 years ago is about that, the election, if you recall, was going to be Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And even apolitical friends of mine who knew I was political, they would comment to me and they would ask me and say, Rich, didn't we fight the monarchy to attain our independence from them? Are we now going to have political dynasties, another Clinton, another Bush?
Clinton. Bush? Yeah.
Exactly, right? So these were people who don't pay attention. They were completely indifferent to politics, yet they were, Evan, attuned to that. So imagine myself sitting back thinking, well, we're going to have another one of these standard fare two-party political dynasty candidates who's going to get elected. And then all of a sudden Trump comes on the scene. And I don't say any of this as a self-defense, but I want to underscore the point because I do think that there were some valid reasons that a lot of people had for supporting Trump. And I don't think those reasons are applicable any longer, but if we put ourselves back in that timeline, there were some reasons that made logical sense. And I think that feelings of disenchantment with our political system, I don't think that's partisan. I think that that dissatisfaction actually crisscrosses against a lot of ideological lines.
Yeah, I think that's well said here. And one of the repeated themes on this program that listeners have probably heard me say many times over the years is it doesn't do us any good to think about people who disagree with us politically as going to bed at night knowing that they're bad people and they just got away with it. That is not how human beings behave. Now, as Molly Ivins and many others before me have said, you know, you can reserve a different level of scorn for people in power who are wielding and manipulating. But for the average person who's just voting, they absolutely believe they're on the right side of history. They don't think that they're bad people. And Rich, you're describing exactly that, right? I mean, you were going to bed at night feeling like, hey, I'm on the right side of history.
Without a doubt. And that feeling of that, in my mind, an affirmation that I was doing what was best, not just for myself, my family, my livelihood, but for the country. It's why during Trump's presidency, Evan, forget about taking a day off. I never took an hour off from MAGA. It was my community second family. in fact, as much as I'm embarrassed to admit this, my MAGA second family oftentimes took precedence over my own blood family because we were unified in our love of country. We were unified in battling tyranny, whether it was Democrats, liberals, or a Mitt Romney type Republican, because we would view someone like a Mitt Romney as essentially the same as a former President Obama or Hillary Clinton or Speaker Emerita Pelosi. That's how we viewed, because this is the black and white world of being in an insular community. And in that insular community, the only media and information that I consumed was a very steady diet of right-wing information. Any information, any news, any opinions, alternative views that even remotely might rebut or refute the pervasively held beliefs of the MAGA community was shunned. It was kept out. And there is something that, and I've got friends, I've got a friend, Zach Elwood, he's someone I've gotten to know who does a lot of work on depolarization. One of the conversations we've had a lot is, and to your point, Evan, that I think because of polarization, a lot of Americans tend to feel like, well, if I try to understand a perspective that I vehemently disagree with, that somehow I'm accepting it, that somehow I'm agreeing with it. And that is really one of the toxic residual effects of a lot of just this acrimony that Americans feel toward each other over disagreements. And I know we'll get to in a moment about my work for Republicans for Harris here in Florida. We talk a lot about democracy, and we should, because we are the oldest living constitution of all nations in the world, but it is going to be difficult to sustain a democracy, especially one we want to thrive, if millions and millions of people are estranged and alienated from and at odds with their friends and loved one. Yeah, it's great to knock on doors. We've got to do that. We got to make calls, eyeball to eyeball, belly button to belly button. But when mothers and sons and siblings and best friends don't talk to each other as a result of what has happened with Trump and MAGA, that's going to be hard to sustain our democracy over time. And you see already the stressors that it has caused. And I have to just reiterate this point that I have some culpability for what is happening right now, because I willfully assisted Trump in wreaking all of this havoc and chaos that's been happening for a near decade.
Talking to Rich Logis, the founder of LeavingMAGA.org. Rich was a longtime member of the Make America Great Again movement, and he's talking about his own story. In a moment, we're going to talk about what made him change, and we're going to talk about how he views different arguments or attempts to persuade as either effective or ineffective. Listeners, we can answer your questions, comments as well. It's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Let me just ask you briefly before we talk about what made you change, Rich. Did you lose family and family relationships and friendships over this?
You mean from leaving MAGA?
No, from being in MAGA and from, you know, yes, the way you interacted. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, and that was all me. And if you think about it, Evan, the way I categorize and really just explain this is that it was really a quiet cutting off. It wasn't that I picked up the telephone of those I had known for many, many years, whom I knew to be blue voters, Democratic voters, and I called them and I said, we can't talk anymore because I know how you vote. This is how I vote. I just quietly lost touch with them. And I didn't really feel any remorse over that because I had that new second family. And as we get to in a little bit about reasons for leaving, there is a little bit of to give a preview of that, of a happy ending with that. I actually did reconcile with all of those whom I had quietly severed ties with when I was in MAGA.
So what was it then? I'm sure everybody wants to know. And you have said that there were two major factors, but take me through that.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, there were two majors and then there were some others I'd like to speak with listeners on. So I just want to preface by saying, because I think it's important contextually to mention this, that I did not believe that the 2020 election was stolen. I don't say this with any, in hindsight, any pride. But I did say in 2015 and 16 that on public record that I believe Trump would be the nominee and would win the general election. So as you can imagine, Evan, most people I knew who were, oh, Rich, I know you want him to win. I just don't want you to be disappointed when it doesn't happen. I said, no, it's going to happen. And it did. And the reason I bring this up is because the fast forward to 2020, yes, I thought we would win re-election, Evan, but I also did tell my fellow MAGA Americans, especially here in Florida, I said, look, don't be shocked if we lose. There's going to be a massive mobilized turnout against Donald Trump. And there was. So I didn't think that the election was stolen. I didn't think that COVID was a bioweapon. I admit that I did not take it as seriously initially as I should have. And I didn't think the COVID vaccine was going to kill anyone or make their arms magnetic or all of these other conspiracy theories that exist, the myriad conspiracy theories about the vaccine. So I did not. So to give a sense of how I was thinking at that time, when the insurrection happened, I did not think that it was a good day. I didn't support it. I didn't go there. Even if invited, I would not have gone. But 6 months after the insurrection, the catalyst for my leaving MAGA was actually not Donald Trump. It was my governor, Ron DeSantis. In fairness, I thought in the first year and a half, early 20 to summer 21, I thought that Ron DeSantis, while not perfectly, I thought that he did show leadership that certainly was superior to how Trump was managing COVID. Because privately, many of my fellow MAGA Americans, we knew that Trump was mismanaging the pandemic. All of a sudden, in the summer of 2021, DeSantis starts to gradually change how he change his tone and his tenor publicly about the vaccine, about COVID. So he started talking about Fauciism, and he started saying that children wearing masks was child abuse. And he also had a presser when he had someone come up and speak. And at that presser, a gentleman said that I'm not going to get the COVID vaccine because it's going to change my RNA. When that happened, it was like I ran face first into a brick wall. And what commenced for me, my first emotion was confusion. And that's really where my doubts commenced at that moment, because I did not understand why he was doing that. I thought maybe I'm missing something. Did something happen I was unaware of? And when that moment happened where I saw this change that he made, I started to do something that I hadn't done in MAGA, Evan. And looking back on it sounds so simple, but it was positively life-altering for me in a profound way, as I started to diversify my news and information sources. And I started to slowly come out of the right wing.
What were you using before? What were you getting news from?
I was primarily consuming the kind of media I freelanced for. So there would be sites such as The Federalist, American Greatness, American Thinker. I even wrote articles for a site called WND, whose founder is the one who originated the Barack Obama born in Kenya birther conspiracy. I wrote for that site. And even now saying it to you, the feelings of regret are conjuring in real time as I'm speaking to you about this. And I was also, I would say primarily the site I most relied on for opinion and news was Breitbart. I lived on Breitbart's site. Mm-hmm. I lived in their comment section. I thought that they were the preeminent MAGA news and media organization. Even a Fox News. Yes, we thought Fox News was better than, say, an MSNBC. But Evan, the truth is, we weren't actually even all that enamored with Fox in MAGA. We did like Tucker Carlson when he became a host, but we looked at Fox as, well, it's a bit Veachy, it's a bit Quisling. Yeah, it's certainly better than CNN or the New York Times, but we didn't even think of Fox News as even MAGA enough.
You've got all the lingo, man.
Well, it's, you know, I am a former journalist. Many, many, many years ago, after I graduated college, I was a newspaper reporter for a couple local weeklies, and my media consumption was constant, in addition to the content that I was creating. So once I started to diversify news and information after this moment with DeSantis, I started to realize that where some of this was coming from, and started to better understand what I had a cursory understanding of, but realizing that there was this anti-vaccine hysteria that had permeated itself all across the MAGA community. I did know that I had known that it existed. I wasn't quite cognizant of just how pervasive it actually really was, though. And right around that time, I also decided to delve a little deeper into what happened on January 6th. I knew of QAnon. I knew of the Proud Boys. I had been at events where the Proud Boys were. I used to look at these groups as hobbyists. I thought they were innocuous, but just hangers-on. They had no influence whatsoever. I'd been at private events, sitting down right next to Roger Stone, for example, at private dinners. But then all of a sudden, I started to realize, because I came out of the right-wing media, that in fact, these groups were not just hobbyist groups, that they were actually well-coordinated, well-funded, and perhaps worst of all, they had the blessing of the most powerful person in the world. So this is all happening essentially simultaneously. And while it's happening, Evan, if I can try to put the listener at that time in my life, I have this internecine battle, this interpersonal, moral, political battle that I'm going through, where I start to ask myself, is what I believe actually true and accurate? Do I support this, what's going on right now? But then I would see a photo, for example, of an event at Mar-a-Lago, or I would look at a writing that I had published that got a lot of positive response. And then I would just vacillate back and forth on these various emotions. And while I was going through this, I was not out of MAGA. I was still in it because I would think, I'm not sure. But then I would very quickly just flip on that and think, no, I am on the right side. This is a roadblock right now. We're going through a bit of a rough patch. It's a volatile time, but I'm going to stick where I am because I still think that I'm on the right side. And this is the kind of, these are the kinds of ping-ponging emotions. Now, throughout the course of the next many, many months, there were a couple other events that happened that did accelerate my leaving. If we recall, in February of 22, the Republican Party had deemed the insurrection legitimate political discourse. This is not some dark web, really fringe, far right, conspiracy online groups or communities. This was the actual Republican Party saying that the riot at the Capitol, the violence and the death that ensued from it, was legitimate political discourse. And then 3 months later, there was the Uvalde, Texas school shooting. Hmm. And one little detail that I do want to mention that I'm not sure if it's pertinent, but I just feel compelled to say it. I actually had owned an AR-15 before Uvalde. And a few days before that school shooting, I had made an appointment with a federal dealer to sell that AR. On en route to that dealer, I was listening to the coverage in Uvalde. And needless to say, I sold that AR and I don't own it anymore. Although as a side note, I am a believer in responsible firearm ownership. So if we think about this—
Let me just jump in real quick, Rich, because I want you to finish the Uvalde story. I want to mention David, Lisa on the phone. Hang there for 1 second. I want Rich to finish this point. We'll take a few phone calls. We've got emails to read because listeners want to know how you view different issues or approaches. We're talking to Rich Logis, who is the founder of LeavingMAGA.org. He was part of that movement for about 7 years before he decided to leave it. It was a difficult, long decision that he came to, and he's talking now about the work that he's doing, trying to respect and understand others and reach out and offer a sense of community. LeavingMAGA.org is his website. So why Uvalde? I mean, why did that affect you in such a serious way after 7 years in this movement, Rich?
In its totality, Evan, it was part of these two really painful realizations that I came to after Uvalde. The first was that the Republican Party and Donald Trump deemed acceptable avoidable deaths and suffering. The other part of this was that Donald Trump and the Republican Party justified and defended right-wing politically motivated violence. So there were these two lines of demarcation. I came to them. I had to make a determination, and this determination happened privately. Could I support what I knew deep down, I should not any longer. Should I accept avoidable deaths and suffering? Should I justify the unjustifiable with a coup d'etat, at least partly orchestrated by the sitting president of the United States? And I privately decided a few months before August, it's right in that in between May of August of 22 post Uvalde, my decision, Evan, was that I could not support this any longer. And in private, I left. And when I left privately, I did not have it in my mind at the time to do something public about it. But then I got to thinking, I was very unapologetically public in my support for Trump and MAGA and Ron DeSantis, whom I did volunteer for also in 2018 and supported him. But I thought if I was that public in that support, I also need to be now public in letting the country know that I had erred in supporting him in the MAGA movement. And on that day, August 30, 2022, if I could give this really quick visual, imagine you got your hand on the mouse and there's the arrow button over the publish button. And I'm exhilarated, but there's still something gravitationally pulling me just a little bit, saying, Rich, is this really what you want to do? Is this the right decision? And I pressed that publish button, Evan. And I knew the moment that I did it, I'd made the correct decision. And as we segue into taking some questions, which I'm really excited to do, I do want to say this. When I published that mea culpa, I actually never thought that anybody would care. I didn't think anyone would care. And instantaneously, I discovered people did. Because from that moment, that day until right now, Evan, and on are the comments from friends and family of those in the thrall of MAGA who come to me very desperate, asking me, Rich, how do I restore these relationships? How do I develop again these loving and close relationships? That's mm-hmm. what we see every single day, dating to the moment that apology was published.
So we're going to go over some of those questions in a moment. Let me get some feedback from listeners who've been listening. I'll take all three of these phone calls if you're on the line, and I've got a bunch of emails. I'll get through as much as we can this hour, listeners. David in Rochester first. Hello, David. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. First, I really want to applaud Rich for his actions. That took a tremendous amount of courage to open himself up to new ways of thinking. And so I really applaud what he's done. And I just want to comment that I could understand why he supported Trump in 2016, because I believe that a lot of Americans really want a viable third party, which has not happened. I have been actually thrown out of public drinking establishments because I would be talking politics. I've come to realize that almost everyone wants the same things. We want good education. We want good jobs. We want clean water, food. What we disagree on is how we are going to attain those things. And that's the difference between mostly Democrats and Republicans. And that's all I have to say. Thank you, Rich, for coming on today.
David, thank you. Rich?
Yeah, David, appreciate that. Thanks so much. And, you know, I just want to thank you for recognizing that I understand why there are so many exasperated right now in our country who are opposed to Trump and opposed to MAGA. I think those who opposed him at the outset deserve a lot of credit also. And the points that you're bringing up, these are the worries and concerns that most Americans have and will have for the duration of their lives: jobs, economic opportunity, education. I thought at the time that as that outsider, as a person who was independent, that I thought Trump was the right person for the job. And I will acknowledge this point that I saw him as someone willing and able to obliterate the established political order. I thought that was what was needed at the time. I wanted a disruptor. Now, we did get one, but in hindsight, we got a disruptor whose disruption was anathema and antithetical to our democracy and our democratic institutions, lowercase d.
Yeah, I mean, I think for people who don't like the American political system in its iterations for the last several generations, it's understandable that you'd want to change it or even to kind of blow it up a bit. But yeah, I have been pretty clear for the last most of the last decade hosting this program. I'm desperate to sort of get back to debating along the lines of where people feel like we can talk policy, we can talk the future of the country, and not talk in a way that is divorced from reality or, frankly, supporting a person who's only interested in themselves. That's really, really tough. But, you know, that's why part of why we're having these conversations. And we always welcome all points of view, including Kevin and Victor next. Hello, Kevin. Go ahead.
Yes, David. I've never heard of you before, but my impressions of you are that you really don't have any convictions or beliefs or values that run deep at all. If you can switch from Trump in 2022 to Kamala Harris in 2024, I mean, to me, you're just a tumbleweed with, you know, nothing inside. I'm not trying to insult you, but that's just how you strike me. But Trump is hated in a way that's totally irrational by people, and that's where the division comes. Trump really does just want to restore America to what it traditionally was. He's not a thinker. He's not contemplative. He's not a philosopher. He just feels ideas emotionally, and he wants America to go back to what it was. And when you talk about the vaccine, the people who know that there's real problems with the vaccine, many of them who are followers of Trump or voters for Trump, to prove that it's not a personality cult, Trump is totally defensive of the vaccine. He's proud of it. And those people who are who think the vaccine is really dangerous and was never tested properly, they show that they have real values and convictions because they're not doing what Trump believes in. They're doing what they believe in. And yet they still vote for Trump. And, of course, one of the big issues today is immigration. Now, Trump hasn't spoken of immigration in a way that's very tactful sometimes. But the fact is millions and millions of people are coming in because Biden and Kamala Harris invited them in. And a lot of those people are wonderful people, hardworking people I would want for my neighbor. But there's a huge element of really violent gang-type people that are coming in. We all know that. And they can't be detected because we're overwhelmed. And Trump is trying to stop that. And if you want a really intellectual discussion of this, you know, J.D. Vance can do it because he thinks in a way that Trump can't. Trump's emotional. J.D. Vance is intellectual, and he can put things into words the way Trump can't. But we can't have this. We can't be overwhelmed by this immigration. Again, many of them are wonderful people, but it's a Trojan horse where all these people are coming in.
Hey,
from
Kevin.
Venezuela.
Can I just? Here's what I want to do. I want you to stay on the line, and I want to give because there's been kind of a range of issues there, and I want to give Rich some space to talk about it. But I want you to stay there.
Okay.
So go ahead, Rich.
Sure. And Kevin, thanks for your comments. So a couple points. The initial point about the tumbleweed remark. So I actually understand to some extent why you might think that. I don't take any credit whatsoever for this, but it is a very unnatural act for our Homo sapiens species to admit when we're wrong. I only did it publicly, not for any kind of fading praise, but because of the reasons I mentioned a few minutes ago, which was that if I was so unabashedly supportive of Trump publicly, I felt that I should let the public know that I no longer supported he and the MAGA movement. So I actually understand why there would be some suspicion and skepticism, because we're not really used to seeing people change their minds and change their views. Now, I'm not in any way, shape, or form comparing myself to some of those I'm about to mention, but if we think about the opening words of our Constitution, the inaugural words of our Constitution, we the people of the United States in order to form a more perfect union, I would argue that as primary a reason as any for progress in our history, for advancements of equality, for that perfection of that union that we all, I believe, and yourself included, want to see realized, the as primary reason as any is because people have changed their minds, because people have changed their views. There were abolitionists who changed their views and came to see slavery is abhorrent, women's suffrage, Lincoln siding with the Union, Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act, support for marriage equality. All of those gains in civil rights could not have been earned and attained without people changing their minds. So I would ask you to maybe respectfully just be a little more, I think perhaps it's okay to be skeptical. I do think that, especially with someone who's a public figure as myself, but is it impossible for someone to say, you know, I used to believe this, I got more information, I stepped into a more diverse information setting, and I came to realize, you know, maybe I actually wasn't correct in some of my own beliefs. And I wouldn't even actually say that all of my beliefs are now the polar opposite of what I believe, but one of the problems of being in an insular community and group, whether it's MAGA or anything else, is that all our entire mindset, our aperture is essentially sealed shut. And whatever information we share, that's what our worldview is. But then leaving, your aperture opens up a little bit. So I would maybe just ask you to think about that. Maybe it's not as impossible. And I know you didn't say the word impossible, so I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but maybe it actually happens a lot more than we realize. And I'm of the belief, as a side note, you know, it's a wager I'm making with leaving MAGA. I think that there are actually many who have quietly left MAGA. I think there are many who are in the nascent stages of doubt, but it's hard to admit when you're wrong publicly, because we do have these understandable fears of being rejected and judged and ostracized. So I don't in any way take personal your remark. All I can do is just tell this story and respect that. I think the way that a lot of the rhetoric that's said about Trump voters and MAGA Americans, I think it's actually very unhelpful. And I do tend to come to the defense of those who are impugned with a lot of these insults and invectives.
So Rich, I want you to respond to something else Kevin said. And I'll just say to that last point that Rich is making there, there are a lot of 2016 Trump voters who had, and I've talked to them, who voted for Obama, who voted for Democrats, and then gravitated toward Trump. I don't know that Kevin would say, well, they're just tumbleweeds. You know, they have no intellectual capacity, and that doesn't mean anything. People do make decisions for a wide range of reasons here, and we're trying to understand that. Now, part of what Kevin is saying, Rich, is that he views Trump as just someone who, you know, maybe he's clumsy in his rhetoric, but he wants America to kind of get back to it's more of where he views its roots. He's concerned about immigration. He supports Trump very much so on immigration as an issue. Can you respond to those two points as well?
Sure. And I just, if I may, Evan, for a moment about the vaccine, I actually think Operation Warp Speed was probably the signature achievement of the Trump administration. Now, in terms, Kevin, of your remark about him being proud about that, I would ask you to think about if there's a contradiction, though, about saying that he's proud of it while also publicly saying no federal monies to school districts who have vaccine mandates. I'm not sure how you would reconcile that. Certainly, if I helped oversee the vaccine and I was proud of it, I would certainly want to encourage school districts to implement those policies. So that's just as a side note there. Regarding MAGA Americans and those opposed to Trump, if we all got together, you know, if you get someone who's against and for, and had a lengthy enough conversation, what we would actually discover is that there are many of the same concerns and shared values and shared goals. And I think it's okay to say, I disagree with the opposing party and the opposing candidate. Maybe there are some ideological ideas, maybe a disagreement, difference of opinion with the vision. But I do think that what I was hearing, Kevin, from you, and again, I say this with all respects, how you're speaking is how I used to think. I used to think that those I disagreed with were intentionally and nefariously trying to irreparably harm America for the benefit of their power to obtain it permanently. That's how I used to think. And then coming out of MAGA, I realized the Democratic Party is actually not my enemy. That all of these figures who are so reviled on the right wing they're not an existential threat to me. And I think, Evan, just as a side note, if I may mention this, yes, I am a co-chair for Republicans for Harris in Florida because I was a Republican under Trump. I'm actually not registered with any party right now. Here in Florida, I'm what's we call an NPA, a no party affiliated voter. Okay. So I would respectfully, Kevin, push back a little bit that the Democratic Party and President Biden and Vice President Harris don't care about the border. I think it's a fair criticism. Let me just say this. I do think it's a fair criticism to say, well, President Biden and Vice President Harris could have moved a little sooner, a little faster on immigration earlier in the administration. Completely fair critique. I would, however, like to mention that there was a bipartisan, very significant bill in place for immigration reform, and that bill was quashed by the Republican Party in their craven sycophancy to Donald Trump. So I think that's an important point to mention also in this broader, very important issue of the border.
Anything you want to add, Kevin?
Yeah. Well, what you just said, that immigration bill, that was not quashed because of Trump. That was quashed because it allowed 5,000 people in a day, in every day, and a lot of other things like that. That was not an immigration bill that most Republicans who care about immigration were going to support. So it wasn't being sycophants to Trump. You're wrong there. He also put some words and thoughts into my head that weren't there. And so, but, you know, the Democratic Party has become so far to the left, so extreme, you know, so woke, so progressive that the very best people on that side are coming over. Last time I talked to Evan, I told him about how, like, Michael Schellenberger and Matt Taibbi have come over, you know, to be caucus with the conservatives. Tulsi Gabbard, the most brilliant person in the Democratic Party that I would have voted for 4 years ago, she left the Democratic Party. Alan Dershowitz has left. Of course, Elon Musk has left. I mean, the Democratic Party used to be a fine and wonderful thing. I was even a Democrat myself. It's not anymore. And for you to go from being a guy actually working for Trump, you know, at a really high level and writing articles, I mean, then going, now you're going to work for Kamala and write articles. I mean, to me, you sound like a financial opportunist. So you made money then. I'm sure you're going to make money now. And to do that in 2 years, if you change your mind on one issue, that's one thing. But when you change your mind on the whole spectrum of issues, where you go from Republican, which you, I guess you weren't, to a Kamala Harris supporter, that's not changing your mind on one thing. That's changing your whole worldview.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to let you go here. I mean, Rich, you can respond there. I'm amazed,
sure,
Kevin, that you think that nobody who has moved the other way could be financial opportunists, that only people like Rich. But go ahead, Rich.
Well, you know, again, I understand, Kevin, to some extent, why you might think that. In terms of the payment, I'll just close with this. If you know where all of this money that I allegedly earned in my time with Trump is, please let me know, because I haven't seen it yet.
Let me just grab a couple other quick phone calls, and then I want to make sure that we cover as much ground as possible as we can with Rich Logis. He's the founder of LeavingMAGA.org. Lisa's been waiting. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hey, Evan. And Rich, I just want to let you know that I caught you on the Midas Touch with Ben Mycelis yesterday.
Thank you. Thank you, yes.
And I'm so happy that you said what you had to say, and it really actually made me think about how I viewed MAGA voters. And I mean, you're so intelligent and so articulate, and you know, it gave me a whole new perspective of how to really, it's like it's a trance, and it's a community, and I can see how it is difficult to break out of that. And I do think that you are demonstrating a lot of courage to do that, and I'm really happy about it. I'm not quite sure what that other caller was talking about, but we won't go there. But thank you, and it gives me a lot to think about. And I'm happy you're doing what you're doing.
Thank you, Lisa.
You know what?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
You know, I'd love to know, like, there have to be Republicans, and I wonder if you know them, Rich, and I know you can't get into it, but I wish we could talk sometime about how many really don't want Trump there. I mean, there, you know, who knows what's said behind closed doors.
Well, on that point, Rich, why don't you tell us, since you founded LeavingMAGA.org, you said that people do reach out. Often it's family members who are concerned. But when you get that outreach and they're asking you what works, what do you tell them?
Sure. Regarding the Republicans for Harris and Lisa, your comment, and thank you for what you said about with Midas Touch, Weaving Mag is going to start distributing some of our video content with Midas Touch Network. And I think that this is actually an important point, just to go back to a moment, something the last caller, Kevin, had said. He was mentioning RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard. With the vice president and Governor Walz's campaign, I am unaware of any presidential campaign in certainly in modern history, if ever, who actually invited into the campaign those who are not of the party. So we have Republicans for Harris in every state. I am unaware of Democrats for Trump in every state. I would think I probably would know of them. I'm sure there are certainly some Democrats who will support Donald Trump, but there are Republicans who are on the fence, moderates who are on the fence, Lisa, and I completely relate to those feelings because that was my entree into MAGA, these feelings of I don't like either. So I want to acknowledge that. What I would differentiate there, though, is that while there may be some apprehension and some ambivalence about supporting the vice president and some of her ideas and some of her vision, the reason that those Republicans who have qualms about Trump don't want to vote for him is because of character. And I think it's very important for us to make the case to those who are on the fence right now that it's okay to disagree with a candidate and support that candidate if you believe supporting her is actually best for the country, not just now, but in the future. And I think that the vice president has united left, center, and right. And it isn't just in the words and in the speeches, but in the actual actions that we have seen. We are seeing a campaign right now who is embodying what I call those unlikely but necessary alliances. And just like earlier I mentioned about changing our minds has begotten progress in our nation's history, well, that a part of that, complementary to that, is unlikely but necessary alliances that are forged. And I think right now we have to make that case. Voters have the right to feel that their vote is earned. No politician is entitled to anyone's vote. The franchise is sacrosanct, and it is important for us to not just make an anti-Trump argument, but it's got to be a pro-Harris one as well.
Charles writes to say, to Rich, do you think you'll become some sort of partner to the left if you give them your support? I assure you, none of your concerns or beliefs will be addressed if you give them your vote. You'll be given a condescending pat on the head while they open the border more, raise taxes more, legalize abortion more. And he goes on to say, when's the hour of connections with Tulsi Gabbard? I assume we'll be getting an hour about leaving the radical left as well. Charles, I'll just say about that. Tulsi Gabbard is welcome on this program anytime. I'd love to have Tulsi Gabbard. I'll see if I can do that. And if a critical mass of people who serve Kamala Harris, her chief of staff, all of the people around her, if they decide to support Trump publicly, if they come out and call Kamala Harris the most flawed human being they've ever met, I will eagerly seek out Democrats for Trump. If Kamala Harris says she's going to jail her political opponents, if she posts cartoons of Trump and Vance and Tulsi Gabbard and Ron DeSantis wearing prison garb, if those things happen, I will be deeply troubled and I will want to interview people who are leaving that movement. Right now I want to give Rich some time to talk about this idea. He says, you can vote for Harris, but they're not going to listen to you, Rich. They're not going to actually listen to your concerns. They're going to condescend to you. What do you think?
Well, I think that this point about what I say about most MAGA Americans being good people deep down, I do not defend my or anyone's ignorance. But I will say something that I think is pertinent and relevant here, which is that all of us are susceptible to being influenced. We are susceptible to being inculcated based on and subsumed into this right-wing world because the Republican Party and Donald Trump and MAGA, they exploit and manipulate people's everyday natural worries and anxieties that we have. And pretty much all of us have them. And I came to conclude in my epiphany, which I, to paraphrase the late Ernest Hemingway, happened gradually and then suddenly all at once, that as part of that epiphany, I ceased looking at myself as a label, whether Republican or conservative or liberal or progressive. And it may sound cliche, but I just started thinking of myself more and more as an actual American who could look at individual issues and make determinations on what I think a policy idea was best for the country. And I think that Vice President Harris has shown, there is perhaps never been a starker contrast between two presidential candidates than Vice President Harris and former President Trump. And all of the reasons that made Donald Trump an enticing candidate, those reasons do not exist any longer. Donald Trump was an unknown, and that was to his advantage in 2016. He is no longer an unknown. And I think people deep down who have some qualms about how to vote, whether to go with Vice President Harris or former President Trump, if we just keep making this case in the argument, I think when all is said and done, many of those voters who are patriotic and I do believe support country over party, they're going to realize that stability should win out over chaos. And even though Evan MAGA is going to remain past November, it's why we founded Weaving MAGA, it's why we're going to do this work to empower people to leave and try to mend these ties with friends and family, find the reconciliation. Now is the time for us as a nation to finally put Donald Trump in America's rearview mirror. This is the best opportunity that we have right now. And today's National Voter Registration Day, FYI. So be sure, please go to vote.gov and check to make sure you're registered.
Rich, thank you for telling your story. And listeners, thank you for all kinds of feedback, a lot of which I didn't even have time to get to on the air. Just means that sometime in the future, we'll have to have Rich back here. And I do appreciate you being generous with the hour here. Thank you, Rich.
It's my pleasure, Evan. Thanks, everyone.
Rich Logis is the founder of LeavingMAGA.org. More connections coming up in just a moment.